You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes.
It's not next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Well, what an exciting week it's been. Google came to Sydney last week, and I jumped the 6:45 a.m. Virgin flight out of Melbourne to find out firsthand what Google wanted developers to develop. It wasn't long into the keynote address by Alan Noble, Google Australia's engineering director, that we learnt about Google Gears, a small application which Google promises will allow us to use the web offline. Like Microsoft's Outlook transitions seamlessly between the online and offline world, Google Gears will do the same for our web experience. The other main point I got from the developers' day was the importance Google places on maps. 80% of data has a geospatial reference, that is, a reference to some physical point on the planet. Google Earth and Google Maps are at the forefront of this push as the search engine juggernaut breathes life into this product with a new package of tools allowing developers even more flexibility to use Google Maps in ways you can only dream of on a website near you. Google put on a generous lunch and a great selection of drinks and nibblies to keep over 700 developers keen and interested from 9 in the morning right through till 6 in the evening. The complimentary Google t-shirt was an unexpected departing gesture and a nice addition to the holographic notepad, Google Pen and Google stickers. Bad luck to those who left early, hey? Oh, and did someone say Microsoft launched something on the same day?
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we take a look at Google's grand plans for world domination. Adam Turner looks on as Apple and GooTube get into bed together. Telstra promises the mother of all lawsuits if the G9 get their way and dig their boots in just for good measure. Microsoft adds some new furniture to their range of hardware. Seven and Engine team up to bring us TiVo, Sony enter the high-definition radio market, another spammer arrested, and Bill Gates catches up with an old friend, Steve Jobs. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, G9 files special access undertaking with the ACCC, Microsoft unveils its new Surface computing platform, the world's worst spammer arrested by federal agents in Seattle, Nokia embarks on designer mobile telephones, and Toshiba's migration to AMD is embarrassing for Intel. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The G9 consortium of telcos last week unveiled its proposal for a $4 billion broadband network in direct competition with Telstra. In a much-anticipated move by the telecommunications industry, the Singtel Optus-led consortium, G9, also outlined a price structure to the ACCC, with prices from $15 per customer per month for basic services up to $50 per month for high-speed broadband for up to 24 megabits per second. While the ACCC welcomed the proposal, Telstra blasted the ACCC's chairman, Graeme Samuel, and said that he had become a lapdog for the G9, and that was unfortunate. Macquarie Telecom is a member of the G9 consortium. Macquarie's David Tudehope spoke with ABC Late Line's Ali Moore last week and said that the G9 didn't need Telstra to establish a new broadband network in Australia, despite Telstra's monopoly on the current copper wire network.
Telstra's proposal is not on the table, it's not public. And what the minister has said to us is, please make this public, please put it in the public domain and let's have the debate. And I think she has said to us she would welcome more details of what our proposal is about. we've now done that today. This is a landmark day today. I think going forward, we'll be looking for support from the Minister.
G9's proposal is different to Telstra's offering and different to the recently announced plans from Labor leader Kevin Rudd, in that G9's network will require no public funding.
This network is fundable. And it's fundable much like a toll road. It's funded by infrastructure investment, significant amounts of debt, and significant investment by specialists who invest in these sorts of projects. We don't need Telstra.
Telstra Chief Financial Officer John Stanhope described the proposal as a phantom intended to create the illusion of choice and is not in Australia's national interest. In what has been hailed as the first completely new computing platform since the PC, Microsoft last week unveiled its new Microsoft Surface. Unlike a conventional computer, Microsoft Surface has a coffee table design with a horizontal screen, which allows several people to gather around and use the device simultaneously. Microsoft CEO Bill Gates launched the Surface computer on Wednesday last week in California.
And when I put my fingers on, there's a camera that recognizes where I'm touching. In fact, I can touch at different places from any side of the table. And so it's actually a Windows personal computer, but with this new Surface capability.
Microsoft has been under increasing pressure from Google and open source movements of recent times, with particular regard to the uptake of its Windows Vista operating system and new Office suite. The launch of Microsoft Surface is expected to reinvigorate the software giant, and while the $5,000 to $10,000 price tag of Surface might scare budding technologists, Microsoft expects the price to plummet over the next 3 to 5 years. Dubbed the worst of the worst criminal spammers, Robert Soloway was arrested by federal agents last week in Seattle and is now facing charges of mail fraud, wire fraud, identity theft and money laundering. The 27-year-old Seattle resident, dubbed the Spam King by authorities, was arrested on Wednesday and, if convicted of various charges, could face up to 65 years in prison. In addition to the prison sentence, Soloway's company, Newport Internet Marketing, stands to forfeit over $770,000. A U.S. attorney alleged that Soloway had been operating illegal schemes since November 2003 and had sent out tens of millions of spam emails in an effort to drum up business for his email advertising software. Mr. Soloway has been remanded in custody pending a further hearing this week. Popular mobile telephone manufacturer Nokia has released a handset made of smoked glass and black stainless steel, available soon for about $1,000. The quad-band Luna 8600 has a 2-megapixel camera and features Bluetooth and Edge for faster internet access. The product is believed to represent a new generation of designer phones that deliver much bigger margins for resellers. Nokia has designed the Luna with a single micro USB port that incorporates charging, audio and data connectivity. For additional product information, visit Nokia8600Luna.com. And Toshiba this week announced plans to dump an exclusive agreement with Intel and move to AMD for at least 20% of its notebook processors. Toshiba claims that AMD notebook processors deliver equal or better performance than Intel's Pentiums and also allows Toshiba to deliver better pricing for businesses and consumers. The move will start to hurt Intel as other vendors such as Dell and Acer have also announced recent plans to migrate to the AMD platform. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Millions of Chinese computers may have been paralyzed by a faulty antivirus update from Symantec.
Oh no!
People have to test their devices to be compatible with other devices, and now there's standards that I can't believe it's actually got to market, and it's, you know, possible it could happen.
I read it and I laughed, and I thought, my goodness.
DOCSIS 3.0 will provide up to 150 megabits per second. That's not bad.
This is identity theft coming from you?
Oh, no. Let's not go there.
30 years later, the original Star Wars is still an enjoyable ride.
Our kids are going to grow up and say, you used to pay for bandwidth? What a joke. And you were shot down in flames by Lydia?
Well, I was. I
saw that email. Ouch.
6 or 8 cents per call to anywhere in the world, and it's untimed.
They are actually going to build in the devices that will unlock doors into your mobile phone.
What the? What, you can download WordPress and run your own blog server? And she said, duh.
Oh, dear.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very hello to everybody this afternoon, this evening, wherever you might be listening to us. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. You're listening to the two-hour version. If you're listening to us on radio, like 3WBC 94.1 in Melbourne, or XX in Melbourne, or the one-hour version if you're listening to us, say, through Cairns FM. Welcome to you all, wherever you might happen to be. And Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan join us this evening. Gentlemen, how are we?
Good evening, Andrew. My head hasn't stopped spinning this week. It's been that busy.
Yeah, it's been a huge week for technology, and I've been amongst the throng of it in Sydney.
Oh, you went up to the Google thing in Sydney?
Look, that was the best $250 in airfares I've spent in a long time.
Fantastic.
It was a wonderful day, but we'll talk about that later. And can I just say that Microsoft, I'd be worried.
Sell Microsoft shares and start buying Google, you reckon?
Yeah, Google shares are pretty good if you've got the spare, you know, $500 US.
Per share.
Whatever the shares are worth these days. I could be wrong, but yes, it's a big organisation with big plans, and all being done in open source, which is seeing the virtues of a lot of people at the moment, including you two guys across the other side of the panel from me.
It's got to save them a lot in licensing fees, doesn't it?
Well, yes. Every single machine that Google has up there in Google land, in the cloud they call it, is Linux.
That's impressive.
Is it?
It is impressive. We're all talking about this during the week, I think, Andrew, weren't we? We're also saying that in addition to them not having any licensing costs because all of their equipment's open source, all of their developer kits and plugins and things like that, so people can actually write applications to run within Google homepages and that sort of thing, it's all free, and it's all freely available to the developer community. You don't have to pay for licensing like you do with Microsoft APIs.
And you've been playing with it already, but we'll talk about that later too. And you weren't even at the developers conference.
No, that's right, exactly right. You've got to hop on board. If you can't beat them, join them.
Oh, too right. Now, yes, speaking of other interesting things, bandwidth is back in the news again too. We had an email from one of our good listeners. Hello, Jeff out there. Yes, if you're an InterNode customer, Jeff's
angry. He's angry, isn't he?
He is. A bit of a rant coming on from Jeff. Well, actually, he's not here to rant, but he's been listening to us. No doubt we'll get the email very shortly. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au or on air, if you like, if you're listening to us, wherever, on the pod, on the radio, send us your emails because we love hearing from you guys. Jeff did this. Obviously, he's an InterNode customer. I am too, for that matter of fact. InterNode are going to actually raise their prices of their broadband for a reason we'll discuss very shortly. But this is what he said. My workmate Ben uses InterNode and they've just raised their prices for all options. But the speed is still the same. Why are we paying higher for internet access but the quality never goes up? Why are my overseas rates coming down and internet speeds far better? There you go. That's what Jeff sent in. Well, let's just say that I think what we're seeing here is a problem in the fact that the capacity, which is what we've been saying over and over and over again, for bandwidth is you know, we're getting to critical stages. This is what everyone's carrying on about at the moment, why we don't have super fast access broadband, because we're now seeing content which is demanding of broadband. We're seeing YouTube, GooTube as it's affectionately termed.
That's the big thing, isn't it? That everything online requires broadband these days.
Yeah. The average email these days, unless it's a see you soon or can you pop round type sort of thing, is, you know, got a big attachment to it.
Yep.
All these sort of things. What else? Dr. Ron, you were going through it this evening when we were chatting before the show, weren't you? There was all sorts of interesting things that bandwidth is being required for just in day-to-day use.
Indeed. A lot of people say, oh, they must be downloading illegal movies and doing things like that if you're churning through the bandwidth, but that's not the case. You could be downloading plenty of legitimate things on the internet. You could be looking at YouTube.
Just running Windows Update these days takes up several hundred meg, yeah.
Graham, I could download a new Linux distribution, which would take maybe a couple of gigabytes of data.
Which we're about to do with the release of Fedora 7.
Exactly right. So
it's not hard to download a whole CD, is it? And then you look at
a whole CD, a whole DVD.
Oh, that too. And look at what the kids are doing these days with their gaming, their online IRCs and all that sort of stuff. It's just a continuous flow. But I think, I don't know, is InterNode jumping the gun here? The press release that came out today says, InterNode says skyrocketing peer-to-peer traffic would appear to have threatened its viability within a year if it hadn't brought on broadband price hikes today. So it's, when I say it, InterNode is pointing the finger at peer-to-peer file sharing. That is, people who download TV shows, people who download movies, people who download software in large quantities from the internet.
Because everybody does it.
Let's face it, we
here in Australia are in a bit of a backwater when it comes to current up-to-date television shows.
Yep.
And I don't know anyone who hasn't been to try and find the latest edition of Lost and the series when we're several months, if not a year or so, behind what's currently screening in the US. And because of our broadband throttlement, for want of a better term, this is what we're starting to see. We're starting to see telco say, right, guys, you're going over your limits. We're going to have to put the price up because it's costing us money.
There are other new services like Juiced, which are becoming more and more popular, and they're very data-intensive.
Did you get yours working, did you?
Yeah, I did. I haven't got time to sit down and watch it, though, which is a bit sad. I get these things going, and I think, oh, well, that was a good experiment. That's been done, and
you're
I move on.
Come on.
Yeah. I'm too busy on holidays. I need to go back to work for a holiday. It's crazy stuff. But, yeah, things like what you're saying, Andrew.
Hope
they're
not listening.
Oh, that's right. And YouTube.
YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, would chew up a lot of bandwidth.
But with the file sharing, with the peer-to-peer traffic, and I just mentioned a second ago that Fedora 7 has come out, which is a new update of one of the larger Linux distributions, and the preferred method to distribute that is using BitTorrent, which is a peer-to-peer network. Now, that's legitimate use of peer-to-peer. That's not peer-to-peer for downloading copyright material or whatever. That's legitimate use of BitTorrent, and that's adding to...
But a lot of software manufacturers are going the same way. They're choosing to use BitTorrent to distribute their software around.
Yeah.
Because it's an effective...
It's very, very efficient. Yeah.
And just because you...
And it makes a fantastic amount of use of the infrastructure that goes between users.
Using BitTorrent doesn't equate to pirating software, does it?
No, it doesn't, no. Uh-huh. Although a lot of the traffic on BitTorrent is, but it's not necessarily that. There are massive legitimate uses for that.
You're right, Graham.
As well.
A lot of sites you go to download software, you can download different types of installers and archive files. You can also download, more increasingly these days, you can download a torrent file.
That's right.
So that you can actually use the BitTorrent network, a peer-to-peer file sharing network, to actually get the install that you need.
And it allows smaller developers to get their software out much quicker to a much wider market.
Yes, hopefully, yes. Hope you're all still with us out there.
Sorry.
the technicalities of it all. But yes, peer-to-peer sort of file sharing is what a lot of people would consider or associate with downloading of feature films before they're released.
Films
and all
or television
and software
or
like
music.
That.
But yeah, our point is that there are legitimate uses for it as well.
Exactly.
And don't forget that technologies like Skype, which is a very popular voice over IP program, that's built on that same peer-to-peer technology.
Mm-hmm. Apple debuts DRM-free iTunes. Did you boys hear about this during the week?
Oh, I've read some interesting things about this.
They've let the cat out amongst the pigeons, so to speak.
Yep, there's been a big deal between EMI and Apple.
Yes, and about time in a lot of respects because you can actually go and get free or DRM-free music by just going to your local record shop and buying a CD. Now,
DRM is digital rights management.
It is.
And that means that if it's got DRM on it, it means there's a limit to what you can do with it. You might not be able to copy it between all your devices. You might only be able to play it on the one device.
And we've spoken about this on numerous occasions, haven't we? Yeah, and... Well, that was one of the biggest workarounds with Apple iTunes and DRM is just spit it out onto
a
CD.
Yeah, which means you get generational loss because you have to decode it and re-encode it.
Well, yes, but it's for the end of the experience of being able to play it in the car.
That's right.
You would never know the difference.
That's true.
I noticed on my new Walkman phone that when I look at information on music files, there's an option there with protection information.
Oh, so you can encode your own stuff, or you can look at what's been...
Well, you can see how many copies you've got left, how many moves you've got.
That's it. You can see who the author is and all that sort of information as well.
Okay, launching with songs from music company EMI, iTunes Plus. I haven't found the Plus version yet. I haven't been to the site, to be quite honest. I've looked for whatever reason. But iTunes Plus features tracks that are free of digital rights management or DRM technology. The unrestricted content means some songs purchased from iTunes will work for the first time directly on portable players other than Apple's iPod, including Microsoft Zune. Now, this, just in that little statement, that paragraph, is what's opened up Pandora's box in a lot of respects, because there was always the issue. Like, I think the European Union got up in arms with Apple recently about the fact that how come you're selling music that only plays on an iPod?
Yep.
And, of course, the same issue sort of arises for Microsoft Zune at the same time. But there's something sneaky going on here.
Yes.
it's not all roses out there.
That's right.
There's been a fair bit of anger, and the BBC reported this quite well.
Some fear that data could be used to identify the owner of tracks if they turn up on file sharing sites. Do you like the link from the previous one that we've just talked about?
Peer-to-peer. Okay. Very good.
People download these songs and go, hey, I'm going to give this to the world.
But encoded in the music that you've downloaded, encoded in the track, is the name, and not only the name, but the email address.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of the person who downloaded it, who originally bought it.
Associated with the iTunes, where it's come from.
That's right, yeah.
Hmm. So that's good. There'll be a lot of people at bill@whitehouse.gov owning music because, yes, but if you buy it legitimately through iTunes, then you've got to have a legitimate email address, don't you?
Yep, that's right. And you probably don't, even if you just, accidentally let a copy out for some reason, if you give someone a CD that you expect to go no further, then, you might be exposing your email address and your identity out on the web.
Well, yes.
And leave yourself open to comebacks.
And the other thing, too, is they're actually charging a little bit more for these tracks, too. The tracks without digital locks, known as digital rights management technology, officially went on sale last week in the UK, and the tracks cost about 30p more in the UK than the original DRM'd tracks.
That's about 87 Australian dollars.
Yeah. Yes, dollars.
I'm joking. No, you're close. Very close.
So is this going to change the face of music? Is this the start of where we're going to head, where music is just going to be come and buy it and download it, and that's the end of the album as we know it? It's all going to go single-based?
I got all excited when I heard the news, Andrew, and I thought, oh, good, it's the end of DRM. Surely that's it, but it's not. It's
I think we,
sad.
As one door closes, we usher in another evil, really, don't we? It's really what it comes down to.
These music tracks are still the grungy 128 kilobits per second.
I'm not sure about that. I think the quality is better too.
They did say that
the
quality
is improved.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So maybe
confer our notes here.
I suspect that one of the other things that you'll see with what you're saying, Andrew, about the death of the album, I suspect what you will see is like bundles that will be equivalent to albums. So you'll be able to download the album as a bundle at a discount. As opposed to downloading all the individual tracks.
Doesn't it, I don't know, I was looking through the CD collection at home the other day, and there's a lot sitting in the shelves there from, you know, misspent youth all the way through to, you know, today's, where I don't buy much at all. But where do you store your music? Do you store it on a hard drive and hope that it doesn't fade off into the never-never land? Because I go through hard drives like I go through socks at times, in a lot of respects.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
And you think, well, where
you
does
lose all
this...
all your music collection.
And when you spend all this good money... And up until recently, if you downloaded anything off iTunes, well, that was it. It had to stay on that computer, or you could move it to, I think, 4 or 5 machines or something like that. Or you could authorize 4 or 5 machines, I think it was called.
Just send it all up to Google.
Well, now there's a thought, too, and we'll talk about that later, too, because...
They probably already got it.
Keep it in the virtual world. Don't keep it in the real
world. Well, you can do that with
your
photos now, too. I don't know whether you know about that, but we'll talk about that. Okay, let's get on to broadband again. Top speed for $50. Telstra Rivals yesterday offered consumers broadband speeds of 24 megabits per second for less than $50 a month, stepping up pressure on the carrier to reveal its plans for Australia's next high-speed broadband network. Now, you touched on this in the news, Dr. Ron. What do you reckon? Is it going to be a viable thing for $50 a month? And why has Telstra got their nose out of joint? Is it because they're going to have to share at long last?
Telstra is saying that they have just purchased a perfectly good functional copper wire network that goes to every house in every Australian household. And they've just bought this from the Australian government. They're not about to share it with anybody, and you can't touch our copper network.
Look, I spend a lot of money on the copper in our street. I spend at least $60 a month to maintain that piece of copper. Never see a guy in the street cleaning it or anything.
They do. They come out in the middle of the night and polish it.
Oh,
and,
what that
make it look nice. But they're going to have a big fight on their hands, I think, because Telstra, I can see their point of view. They're saying, well, we've just paid all this money and it's ours. It doesn't belong. It's not public infrastructure anymore. It belongs to our own private organisation, and you keep your grubby mitts off. And what the G9 has done, said to the ACCC, we want some sort of undertaking that we can have access to the copper network, and Telstra are saying, I don't think so. We'll see you in court.
Yes, let's see whose pockets are deeper.
Well, that's what it's going to boil down to.
And guess who's going to lose? We are.
I know who's going to lose. I know who's already losing.
All of us around the table here, and what we're talking about now, we're already losing. Internet are putting their prices up because they can't get the bandwidth that they need at the prices that they want to pay.
Exactly, yes. Well, at the G9, they unveiled their proposal for the $4 billion broadband network in direct competition.
They didn't give much details. They just took the lid off the box and said, here, quick look, and put the lid back on and gave it to the
well,
people, didn't they?
They did. And they've applied to the ACCC to have that special access undertaking to get access for their services via the copper network.
Because Telstra are saying it's going to be around $80, I think, is what they're saying in their package. Not that they've put their cards on the table either. It's the biggest...
They've said
biggest poker game out at the moment,
yeah,
isn't it?
The G9 have set up to about $50 per month for high-speed broadband of up to 24 meg, which is what you just said, yeah.
Yeah, Senator Coonan hasn't come out and said anything yet, has she? I haven't sort of been... I've been busy. I've been in Sydney. What's happening, boys?
No. Other than to say that she's received the application, or the ACCC's received the application, and they're talking to G9 about it at the moment.
Okay. So bear that in mind with the election. And what are we? We're in June now, aren't we? We've kicked over another month. It's yes. Another month closer. 5 months thereabouts to D-Day for the incumbents. Will Labor get up to beat Liberal? Who knows? Watch this special. We should have a little lotto in here like we do from time to time. Spam flows despite arrests. We had an arrest. One of the Americans. Was it the Americans that got arrested the other day?
It was a Canadian.
Canadian.
From
Ooh,
Canada.
Sorry.
Yeah, close
sorry.
Enough. Yeah, so they're all the same over there.
Same thing. Oh, that'll get back.
That's Graham at techtalkradio.com.au.
Thank you very much.
The 180 million people you've just offended, Graham.
Sorry.
But don't send it to the main one.
No, the gentleman's name was Robert Soloway. He was arrested by federal agents, Andrew and Graham, in Seattle, and he's now facing all sorts of charges for fraud, identity theft, money laundering, all sorts of things.
Because I can tell you that the spam has picked up no end in the last week. All sorts of strange things coming into my many various inboxes around the place, even to the point now where some of my form-to-emails have been got. You know, little bots come along and they fill out the form and they leave you be.
You just have to shuffle the fields around, don't you?
Well, I'm going to have to put one of those, you know, pick those strange numbers in the fuzzy box type sort of thing to submit before it actually turns it into a... But that's what it's come to. You were saying last week about unusable email. Well, boy, oh boy, it's getting harder these days to stay one step in front of these guys.
Did you ever listen to our show last week, Graham? I think Mark was in last week.
Yes, I did hear the show, though. I heard most of it.
What were your thoughts on our discussion there about
most
email?
The future of email?
Yeah.
Yes, I really don't know. As you suggested, something somewhere is going to have to change. I just really hope that whatever it is open so that we don't end up with either Microsoft or Google or one of the big corporations in complete control of our email system.
It's possible.
It is possible. That's the bit that worries me. Just
Google have got tabs on nearly everything else. I haven't mentioned email of recent times.
Have you seen Gmail?
Oh, yeah, I have seen Gmail. Anyway, yes, you could be right. Could be onto something there. So, this guy got arrested, and...
He was very prolific, too. He sent out massive amounts of spam, so... But it doesn't... Having got him off the streets doesn't seem to have cleaned up our inboxes any, does it?
There's plenty more out there. He's probably just... You sit behind bars and doing it. You can do that. Wireless technology.
Oh, he probably does, too,
Mr. Soloway and his company have actually been the subject of civil disputes in the past. One, a notable one with Microsoft, where Microsoft won a $7 million civil judgment against him a couple of years back. So,
oh, is that the guy?
Yeah, this is the first time I think criminal charges have been brought against him.
Wonder what will happen. You'll get let off with the good behaviour. You'll be weeding public parks for the next 6 months.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting test of the Canadian laws, won't it, to see if they're up to speed with the new technologies.
Well, an attorney said if he was convicted of the various charges, he could face up to 65 years in prison.
Oh, fantastic. He deserves no less.
Yeah, we'll send him an email in prison.
Yes.
Hitwise released the Australian top 20 websites for April in 2007. I have here a list in front of me, gentlemen.
Ooh.
We're only going to cover the top 10 because I think the bottom 10 is just like superfluous.
Like we're in number 17 for broadband. We're just,
exactly.
Yeah, everyone forgets about us.
So I just thought this puts things into perspective a little bit about Australian web surfing habits. Coming in at
number 10.
Coming in at number 10 was Wikipedia.org.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. We're all big wiki users here.
We are.
Number 9 was GooTube. YouTube for those people who aren't sure about.
So we're already into some big sites, even down at 10 and 9.
Yep.
Number 8.
Number 8 was MySpace.com.
Okay, that biggest.
The male's thing where and all that sort of stuff. Number 8, 7 was Yahoo.com.
Really?
Yes, really.
Yes.
Yahoo gets a mention.
Because people install Messenger and it sets the homepage without their permission, and you get lots of hits on Yahoo.
Yeah, it does.
So that's it. You get hits by default. It's like when you log on to Windows for the first time, they take you to MSN.
MSN.com,
They get the vote by proxy there, really, don't they?
That's exactly right.
The shoppers came in at number 6, ebay.com.au.
eBay.
Yes.
Number five, social networking space, MySpace.
Yep.
They came in 2.1% of the market share in Australia. I'll give you some percentages
the,
now.
The kiddies are doing well with MySpace and the...
Influential sites, yes.
Yeah.
Number four, by default, MSN with 2.54% of the marketplace.
Yep, because it comes set up that way when you install Windows.
And your browser.
Okay, now the top three, you'll never guess. Number three, Hotmail.com. We all have a Hotmail account, apparently.
Certainly do.
They cranked in at 2.94% of total market share.
Number three.
That was number three. Number two... Google.com at 3.2.
Only number two.
At 3.25%.
I'm disappointed by that. Yeah, go on. So,
number one.
Drum roll.
Careful, the CD will skip. Number one, google.com.au.
Oh, there
you
go.
At 7.17% of the market share. So there you go. That's the top ranking websites in Australia, thanks to Hitwise, as of April 2007. Does any of those surprise you?
No, that sounds about right to me, actually. That's really good.
I'm surprised there's no... banking sites in there, and I'm surprised that there's no newspaper sites in there. Oh, actually, if you look further down the list, in number 14 was NetBank, the Commonwealth Bank's online banking system.
Oh, really? There you go. And news.com.au there somewhere?
But no news services, apart from 9MSN, I guess, which you could sort of call a bit of a de facto tabloid rubbishy news service, really, isn't it? Oh, sorry.
Is the ABC going to mention in the lower...
Lower 20? No. 20, go to, if you want to go and have a look at the list, just go to hitwise.com.au, and right-hand side down the bottom, I don't have the browser launched at the moment, but you'll see it all there. Just follow your nose and top 10, top 20 things. And we'll bring you those. I think that's quite interesting.
That is, that's really good.
Surfing habits of Australianos over the course of time.
Hmm.
Now, speaking of media companies, Channel 7, in conjunction with Engine,
are going to
bring TiVo to
this
country.
TiVo's coming to Australia.
Are we excited?
I am. I'm very excited by
Adam's
this.
Excited,
is
too.
Is it only going to work for Channel 7? Because that would be less exciting.
It's only going to work for Channel 7. And because they control it, Graham,
I didn't read that in my press release, but you do know something.
No, I don't. No, I'm just asking the question.
You're a bit of a gadgety audiovisual. You follow Adam in a lot of respects, James. Are you looking forward to TiVo, Brian?
No, I'm looking forward to what TiVo will bring people, Australian television watchers.
Do you want to explain what TiVo actually is?
Yeah, it's a personal video recorder device.
What's wrong? I've got one of those in my set-top box. What's the difference?
Yeah, you have. Well, there's not a lot of difference. It actually works with an online electronic episode guide, so you can tell it when...
A program guide.
A program guide, that's right, Graham. You can tell it when you want to record programs, and it can automatically start and stop, even if, you'll never believe this, but sometimes networks run behind schedule.
Oh, does it keep up with that, does it?
It does, because it's electronic, and it knows when a program starts and when it stops, so you're not going to get... the last 10
minutes. I've often wondered about that, yeah.
Yeah,
and does that mean Channel 7 can take over your recorder?
Yes. Now, this is the issue, because they're excited, because you get TiVos here which are unlocked, and people get excited because they can skip through ads and things like that in pre-recorded programs. But if Channel 7 are controlling it, they potentially can say, no, don't let the TiVos skip over this ad. This is an important one. We want people to know that Home and Away is going to be...
Does this mean that they can actually sabotage a competitor's programming by not letting them... I don't know, watch it or something like that?
There's this whole issue at the moment about...
This is Big Brother electronic style, yeah. Isn't it?
It is. There's a whole issue at the moment about an episode guide and people that want an independent organisation that actually maintains an episode guide.
The program guide, yeah.
The program guide. Sorry, yeah, I keep saying episode guide. Sorry, the program guide. But,
PGs.
Yeah, that's the way, electronic program guide. But at the moment... we don't have anything like that in Australia like there is in Europe and the US.
It's an expensive little sucker. The US version sells for around about $600. That's about $700 odd. I don't know whatever the dollar is at the moment, but that's
not too bad.
But still, you can probably get a set-top box with a HD DVD recorder or something like that for similar prices, I would have thought. And you're not going to have the benefits of Channel 7 saying, no, you can't skip through the ads.
Well, this is it. You see in the media release...
But you have to set a three-hour program to record a one-hour show because you never know whether they're going to start at half an hour early or an hour and a half late.
Now.
But the good thing about the digital interface, Graham, though, is you say, I want to record that program that's scheduled there.
Right.
And then it will work out when it goes to air and it will record.
Well, if it does that, then that's really good.
All right.
That's the difference, I suppose, between that and the other set-top boxes.
Does it say when it's going to hit here? Because I think Engine are distributing it. They needed something to keep themselves going because VoIP is being really squashed by the telcos at the moment.
In the first half of 2008.
Oh, okay. Plus or minus some bugs, I suppose.
That's the one.
And availability and things.
Yep.
Adam Turner put his feet up on the couch and he's having a bit of a look at TiVo and the appropriated things. So sit back, relax, and here's Adam's comment for this evening.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The hamstrung Apple TV media player is finally showing signs of life, with Apple adding YouTube access and a 160GB hard drive. It sounds promising, but getting into bed with GooTube might backfire on Apple. It was an obvious move from Apple in terms of what users want. I said months ago that YouTube access could be the killer application for the Apple TV, but I wasn't sure if Apple were brave enough to actually do it. The big danger for Apple is creating bad blood with the major content providers currently at war with YouTube, such as Viacom. Striking content deals for the various iTunes stores around the world, like Australia's substandard offering, could become even trickier if content providers see that Apple is in bed with the enemy. YouTube access sounds exciting, but the fact the Apple TV has proven so easy to hack means people are already running all kinds of applications on it, even Juiced. It probably won't be long before someone converts the Apple TV into a full-blown personal video recorder. Speaking of PVRs, the big news in Australia this week is the infamous TiVo personal video recorder will officially hit our shores next year, even though Australians have long been importing US TiVos and hacking them to work locally. TiVo has announced a partnership with Australia's 7 Network to bring its personal video recorder to Australian lounge rooms, allowing viewers to record high-definition television, pause live shows, and even fast-forward the ads. TiVo's biggest competition in Australia comes from the few devices that are compatible with the ICE TV electronic program guide, such as media center computers and PVRs from Topfield and BeyondWiz. Such devices can match, if not surpass, the features of the TiVo when combined with ICE TV's electronic program guide and remote scheduling service. ICE TV's greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. It isn't affiliated with the television network. As a result, it has no master to answer to, but it's also under legal attack from the Nine Network, which claims ICE TV is infringing Nine's copyright of its programming schedule. If Seven really wanted to do the right thing, it would have come to ICE TV's aid, which would have given the added bonus of really annoying Nine's owners, the Packer family. Still, aligning itself with ICE would have only given Seven control over the EPG, whereas aligning itself with TiVo gives Seven control over the actual hardware as well. In the US, TiVo isn't afraid to exert its influence over what its users watch and how they watch it. For example, they have the ability to force the box to record certain shows and lock some advertisements so they can't be fast-forwarded. Australians are embracing technologies like PVRs to get away from such behaviour from the television networks, but buying an Australian TiVo will leave owners at the mercy of both TiVo and the 7 Network. Only time will tell if this is a bad thing. So Apple TV is in bed with YouTube, TiVo is in bed with 7, and 9 are trying to screw ICE TV. Things are hotting up in the digital lounge room.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Last Thursday, Sydney time, I got on a plane very early in the morning, around about 6:45, headed north to Sydney. It was raining in Melbourne, so it was good. It was a beautiful day in Sydney too. Google was putting on Google Developer Day, the very first, the inaugural 2007 edition, which was run simultaneously in a dozen or so odd other cities around the world at one time. Well, just, you know,
on the
daylight
same day.
Displaced, yes.
So that means that we probably got the first one.
We did. We did. So as a result, we were a bit privy to some of the new things that were coming out. And it was a fantastic day. It started off, they moved venue because they couldn't fit everyone into their initial venue.
How many people were there, Andrew?
700 odd were developers ended up going up to this funny little place, Technology Park, just near the airport in Sydney, which was good. It only took 10 minutes. I didn't even have to go across the coat hanger to get there, which was fantastic. Because having been living in Sydney for a few years, as soon as you mention going across the other side of the harbour, there goes the day. Especially when you come back, too. But it was a great little venue that they ended up finding, which is an old rundown railway yard, I think it was. And we had visitors in from Googleplex, from Mountain View in California, coming to talk to us about things. And we met a lot of the head guys here at Australia, at Google Australia. Alan Noble was one such chap who's the head of engineering for Australia. And you'll hear from him in just a few moments. But we also heard from a couple of developers themselves who were in selling their handiwork to us potential developers. Now,
so when you say developers, you mean people that work for Google developing or people that work independently developing using Google stuff?
The Google people themselves were actually up on stage telling us about the products that they were developing, and they were educating us, as in the people who were there, the developers, we need you guys to now populate these platforms. We've made the containers, now start putting things in them,
guys. When you're talking about developers, just to take a step backwards for a second, what are you talking about? You're talking about people that design web pages?
Yes, people who design web pages,
yep,
as well as people who design interfaces, because it was a two-pronged attack. They sort of wanted to beat up the Google Maps scenario, because mapping is everything to Google, as we all know, but their latest fairly sizable ambition was to take the web offline. You know, when you're in a plane or when you just can't connect for whatever reason to a web service, you still have functionality of the last cached version of the website you're on. And that means being able to make calculations, being able to look at a database, anything that you would need to do. The only thing you can't do is actually send information like an email or things like that, because you're not online. But
this is pretty ambitious on the part of Google, because up until only a few years ago, they were just a little search engine company. They used to go to google.com to do your search. Yeah, well, compared with what they're turning into. And now we've started to see the emergence of things like Google Maps.
Yes.
And also personalized desktops and things like that.
Yes.
And so now what we're doing, we're taking the internet offline.
Well, it sort of follows along from where Microsoft started with the Outlook product. Outlook being a email contact manager sort of program which helped you organize your day-to-day routine, whether it was business or pleasure.
Graham's a big fan.
Yeah, well, we won't go into the greatness of that program, but one of the things it did do well is if you managed to lose connectivity to the internet, you would still be able to look at your contacts and...
Yes. Yes.
And still be able to update things, and it would resynchronize when it found connectivity back to your network again.
Yes, that is one of the very good features of Outlook.
So that is the model that Google has taken and applied it to the web.
The World Wide Web, not just email and contacts and calendar.
That's
so you would tell it what pages you're interested in, and it would cache them offline for you.
Exactly.
Is that the idea?
So exactly. A little lightweight engine is downloaded. It's a plug-in.
So I like to read the Tech Talk Radio forums and the Tech Talk Radio main website and IT Wire and news.com.au and the ABC's website.
Yep.
And it would cache all those offline for me, and I can read them while I'm on the plane and not connected.
That's right. That's right. You're still having problems fathoming this, I can tell.
Yeah.
It's a big ask. Now, your ability to store information about websites is limited purely by, A, your bandwidth limitations, and B, your hard drive size.
Well, that's going to be the next problem, because if I start saying that I want to cache the whole of the abc.net.au, or the whole of Wikipedia, or the whole of the Google Index...
Or if every website you go to has 10 links to 10 other websites...
That's right.
Slowly but surely, it's going to turn into a huge undertaking.
They're all good questions. Now, I don't pretend I'm going to answer them all for you here today because I've been to the Developers Conference. But what I can say to you is that when web people write a web page, when web authors get out there, they need to think about how Google Gears works. Now, this is the new little engine that plugs into your web browser, whether it be Internet Explorer or Firefox,
Safari?
Opera. Not so much Safari. No. Not Safari. Well, it's true Apple style. They're having problems with it. But it will happen eventually, Safari. But what happens is a little plug-in which you download. You know, if you've been to the Firefox plugins page, which you probably all have, some may not,
yes,
but some yes, you'll be able to download Google Gears. And it sits in your... It's a little sort of database... and little engine, what they call, it sort of goes off and downloads the website in background and stores it locally on your hard drive whilst you're doing things. Now, it's clever enough to know that when you're surfing and doing things on your computer, not to download. It sits there and waits till you're actually, you know, getting the coffee, and it says, ha-ha, I got some time here, I'm going to download a few things. Now, the key behind it is that web developers have to change a little serial number on their website so that it knows to increment when they do a change. It's like a start of authority record, if you're familiar with that, with DNS servers, so to say that, hey, there's a new version out since the last one. So when the little bot comes along, when your computer comes along, should I say, and queries ITY or whatever it is like that, it'll compare the previous serial number with the new serial number and say, oh,
we'll
look.
See if anything's changed.
And then there's a differential search engine, so it'll only pull down what it needs to pull down. It doesn't actually go and go, hey, I'm going to cache the whole thing and download the whole site for you.
It sounds like this little Gears plugin is turning everybody's computer into its own standalone Google bot. It's going off and crawling and indexing information and making it available.
It is. I tell you what, one of the best things behind Gears, let me get Alan Noble, who's the engineer from Google in Sydney, to actually tell you a little bit about it.
Ah, good.
Probably a bit better than me too, but I say it was good.
So what Google Gears is a way to take web applications, so Ajax applications that were designed for dynamic, very highly dynamic applications that are, you know, designed to run in your web browser, but they're online applications. With Google Gears, you could take applications and make them run offline as well. Good example, I'm using Gmail, fantastic online email application. What do you do when you're on a plane? Can't use Gmail. Well, with Gears, once Gmail is Google Gears enabled, you'll be able to use Gmail on and off the plane. Important point, it's not just Google applications, it's going to be open source, so any developer developing web applications will be able to use Google Gears to take their online application and make it work offline as well. It's also going to help speed up online applications too, because it has a built-in or a local database. So even online applications are going to benefit from some improved performance by using Google Gears too. So that's what Google Gears is in a nutshell. Developers have to basically program to the Google Gears API. So there's some work involved in doing that. We're hoping it will be a standard. We've signed companies like Adobe on board to kind of help make it a global standard, and we're making it open source to encourage as many developers as possible to get behind the standards.
So it's a big ask at this stage, as you can tell from what Alan was saying.
Yeah, but it sounds like you have to make your website usable with this system.
That's so what I was saying, yeah, you need to have a little serial number here for work.
So I can't go and just arbitrarily decide to make an offline cache of Wikipedia.
No.
Because that would be bad.
No, exactly. and you'd need a very big hard drive. Although you can actually get Wiki now, they were talking about it recently, offline version.
Offline Wiki.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, they're also talking about producing a paper Wikipedia.
Oh, heaven forbid.
Actually printing it up in books.
Oh, well, there you go. Tech Talk Radio will be in paper at last.
The API that Alan was talking about there stands for the Application Programmers Interface. So
now I know what you mean.
Yes, it's a group of... an API is a group of tools that software developers can use to write programs for a particular platform.
And link into existing technologies.
That's the one.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's three parts of Google Gears. One's a local server. So you download and run a little server on your, which is a web server.
Yep.
On your machine. It's got a database which stores data locally in fully searchable database format for when you download those particular websites. And then there's the worker pool, which is the engine behind the Gears. And the worker pool is the actual little bot, I guess, for want of a better term, that actually goes and pulls down the website and background.
Yep.
Whilst you're doing something else and lets you interact with it.
It does sound like a scaled down Googlebot for your computer.
It does a bit.
The more you describe it and the more I think about the concept, it's very clever.
If you want to know more about this, if you're very interested, or even anything about Google's APIs, application program interfaces, visit code.google.com/APIs. That's APIS. And they're all there, and if you want, you can just type Gears after that, and it'll tell you all about how Gears works as well, how to install some sample applications and things like that. Interesting. But knowing how the Google juggernaut works, it will become a pseudo de facto, and then become a de facto, probably, no doubt. And it'll be with us forever and a day. But that's how they're going to plan on taking the web offline. Now, the other thing they were talking about, which was their big selling feature, was Maps. We've all, no doubt, played with Google Maps.
Google Maps. You can zoom into it to street level now and some parts of the maps, which is quite scary.
It is. There's a lot more scariness about to come along, too, because, once again, everything that Google does is written in open source. So that means that people can come along, download the code or the instructions for the program, alter it and publish their own version, or build it into their own applications. Now, if you're visiting websites, you're going to start seeing more and more and more of this. One of the great features that Google has adapted is everything is encapsulated into an XML file. An XML file being a file which is becoming a sort of standard in its own, because we use XML files for podcasting feeds.
Yep.
It's like the control file which tells people things like iTunes where to go and download a file. It actually tells people... information about links and all sorts of things you can package into these one general purpose all XML
files. An XML file contains all the information you need to build something.
That's pretty much, and it's all in sort of plain English. That's what I was saying to Dr. Ron tonight before.
Plain text.
It's not, no longer do you need to speak computerese to actually make head nor tail of what XML files do. But Google are now starting to use these so that anyone can program Google Maps. Now, Maps, up until recently, has been a fairly sort of static presentation. You haven't been able to do much apart from go somewhere, zoom down, and
but static isn't the look. Google way, is it?
No, definitely not. Now, let's take, for example, some entrepreneurial people. This is, once again, developing. They want people to become entrepreneurial and develop these overlays for Google Maps. Now, an overlay is something which you take the base map and you can overlay roads. You can overlay places like popular touristy places and things like that. So
or
developers,
petrol stations,
or pizza restaurants.
Now you're thinking.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking restaurant. Yes. What else can we do? We can do real estate.
Yes.
So an entrepreneurial real estate company can then say, visit our realestatejunkies.com site, and you'll find a map, and here are all our places for sale or rent. Okay.
Like little bubbles on the map.
Fantastic, this is great. And there's all these little dotty things which you can roll over the dots now, and the dots interact and they can show you pictures and they can do all sorts of things like that.
Yep.
But wait, there's more. With all these new overlays, or mashups as they call them, coming into vogue, you can now randomly, as a web developer, present your viewers of your website with all these different types of overlays. So no longer do you have just the real estate, you can go and put the local education department's overlay of schools on this map for real estate.
Yep.
You
so,
can.
So even if you if you're buying real estate, you can see where it is in relation to the local school.
Exactly.
And the public transport that you're going to need to get there.
Exactly.
And the local shops.
That's right. You can now also, some law enforcement agencies in the United States are actually offering real-time crime statistics.
Okay, so you can tell whether you're going to get mugged.
So you can see if you're in a good area or a bad area when you go and buy your house, especially if you're on the other side of the planet and you don't quite know where you're going to go and buy your house. You can see the crime area.
Can you see if there's a speed camera down on the corner?
Well, I don't know. I think that's only in Melbourne, and I don't think they've offered that information. But wait, there's more. Now, you see where we're sort of heading for this dynamic overlay? Well, because it's an XML file which brings the information into Google Maps, XML files, being the nature that they are publishing feeds. So you can plug into a live real-time feed and overlay that at the same time.
So as it's updated, you're seeing the changes on your map.
On your map,
right.
Exactly. Let's put this into perspective.
So you might be able to see the price of petrol at the local service station.
Oh, how good would that be?
But
you'll
also
see it changing.
80% of data has a geospatial reference, as we said in the introduction. That means that it's something, out of all the data that we have on this planet, that 80% of it is going to have some reference to a point on the Earth.
So you might be able to, as a real estate agent, see that somebody in your area is searching for real estate in the area that you work in.
Well, potentially. But more importantly, look at what has latitude and longitude or position sent to it all the time, like things like taxis.
Yep.
They have GPSs and they relay back to base. Look at police cars, look at ambulances, look at couriers, taxi trucks.
All of that, yep.
Imagine overlaying that
in planes.
Planes, yes. Imagine overlaying that in real time on your Google Maps.
Okay, so you
so
can
the little
see,
dot can move along the street.
You can see where the courier car is.
Ah, now we're thinking, yes.
And you can see that, oh, hang on, he's going to be here in 5 minutes with my package. He's going to be here in 2 minutes with my package.
Oh, no, he's overshot. He's got the wrong address.
Oh, no.
There are enterprising courier companies that do that now. I don't know if they use Google Maps, but they certainly are able to track where your parcel is. If you're sending something from one side of the world to the other, you can go to their sites and it says, yes, it passed through this freight forwarder 3 hours ago.
Yep, I've seen those sorts of things. So this is going to take that to the next level.
It will.
Exactly. And it's going to be a free interface in anyone's website.
Isn't that tremendous?
So anyone can add. It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be free to the general public. If you're a freight company and you go to the trouble of adding this, you might charge for access to it or something. But
if you wanted to. It depends on supply and demand.
Or
you
might want to supply
it
as free as a service, yeah.
Exactly.
It'll be up to the individual implementers.
Here's Alan Noble again from Google in Australia talking a little bit about maps.
So Maplets is some software that was developed right here in Australia. It's essentially gadgets for maps. So if you think about Google Maps mashups, that makes it great for a web developer to basically create a website of their own and then overlay some interesting information. For example, housing.com would give you, for example, apartment listings on top of the Google Maps. The trouble is all these mashups are islands of information. They're scattered all over the web, and it's hard to find them and hard for users to kind of navigate them. So with mashups, we turn it around now. On a single map that's hosted by Google, these maplets can be used to basically, by users, to control different types of information. For example, you could have a real estate maplet, load that one, bam, you see real estate listings. Then you want to look at, for example, public transportation in the area, you load the public transportation maplet, and you can see that. And so you can combine different types of GIS information on the same map. So we'll be promoting maplets a bit like Google Gadgets. So there'll be essentially a personalized map page, and you can select the maplets that you're interested in. So if you're interested in maplets for weather or maplets for real estate or maplets for crime, transportation, it'll all be there. And we'll be running some competitions also to kind of encourage people to get out there and create maplets. So
Create. Google running competitions. I wonder what the prize would be. And all expenses paid to the server room at Google Land. I'd put my finger in the upper for that one. I think that'd be terrific.
Have a look at server number 42.
Yes, server number 42, as Adam was alluding to. So, yes, it's all about to happen for Google. And he was talking about all sort of plugins and things that you can put in. Now, iGoogle is an interesting development.
This is the next thing to talk about, isn't it?
You may or may not have noticed this, but if you log into Google, if you have a Gmail account or you're doing analytics or whatever, there's a whole show here on Google, let me tell you. But we're going to talk next about iGoogle. Now,
iGoogle.
How many people have a homepage which is somebody else's homepage, like the ABC? Like I used to be, and I still have it there in one of my tabs.
I used to have 16 tabs that opened in Firefox when I started my browser.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
You've got 17 now, have you?
No, I've changed the way. It was taking a very long time for Firefox to start, I've got to say. But I've changed to iGoogle, which is what some people might recall the Google personalized homepage concept.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I tried that for a while.
Did you? About 4 weeks ago, they've launched the new iGoogle.
Okay.
Which has replaced their personalised homepage concept, I think, Andrew.
It has indeed. Mm. And it works on the same technology of XML files. People can get out there and author create and bring a little applet into their iGoogle page. Now, for people who go, what the hell are you talking about? If you're familiar with the Google page, and let's face it, you all are. Everyone knows what the Google page looks like.
Yep.
If you move the search bar to the top of the page and put some pretty pictures around it, and the pretty pictures you get to choose, it leaves a lot of white space underneath. And companies like 9MSN would actually put ads and rubbishy stuff down there so that you'd be going, oh,
but
dear,
the good thing about Google is that it is such a simple, quick page to load. That's why I use it as my homepage, because it loads in half a second flat.
Exactly. And it still will. What they're asking developers to do is to build these little, you know, applets that you can drag and drop onto the homepage. Now, an applet is a really, really lightweight, quick, easy to load plug-in, for want of a
little bit. Software gadget.
Yeah. If you're a Macintosh user, you would know them as widgets. Mm-hmm. Widgets, is that right? Yeah, the dashboard type sort of concept. But what you can do now is you can then drag things like a calendar, the weather information, all the standalone little applets onto your iGoogle desktop. So you now have a home page or web page when you start your browser, which is tailored to you. You can have the ABC headline news down there, which is click-throughable to the ABC site. You can have the Melbourne weather, the Sydney weather, the Cairns weather, the Darwin weather, the weather in New York, wherever you want weather. You can have that there too, so you can sort of see your four-day forecast. Great for when you're choosing what you... Depends whether you log on before you get dressed in the morning. You can choose what sort of garments you need to wear. And the next thing, there's one there. I'm looking at the screen right now. Dr. Ron has been busy. The Tech Talk Radio little gadget is sitting there on the desktop. It's in beta at the moment, so I'm not going to tell you anything about it yet. Looks really good, though, Dr. Ron.
Thank you.
It's up there with my notepad and my calendar.
Tech Talk Radio logo. It says, "Hello, world." I think that's about all it does at the moment.
So watch this space. It's under development. Dr. Ron has got the bug. He's on holidays. But just look at what... going full circle in our discussion today, if you have a look at what Windows did with Outlook, Outlook is a server-based technology. It needs to sort of be plugged in at home and talking to your local network to actually access these things. Google are going the other way. They're saying, put your information onto our servers and you'll be able to access it through a web portal wherever you are, anywhere in the world, 24/7. Now, some people are going to go, privacy. And some people are going to go, cool, that makes life easier. And I'm the latter, I reckon. If I want someone to be able to, if I've got a PA that I want to update and I'm traveling, and I want to update my appointments and my calendars.
And if Google want to know what your appointments are, then good luck to them.
Good luck to them. But see the benefits of what they're trying to do. They're trying to take the web offline.
But how, so how are you going to feel about that privacy when Google sell their database to XYZ advertising company?
Well, it's funny.
So that when they know that you've got an appointment in Sydney in 3 weeks, they send you an inbox full of ads for airlines.
Well, yes, you're right. And as soon as they breach that trust, I'm going to trust them.
Yep.
Is my attitude. There are antitrust laws that are kicking in now with Google, because why would they bother with little old me when they're out there with big fish? And I mean big fish,
but
like crime agencies.
Why are they collecting so much of our personal data?
Well, are they?
Aren't
they? There's so much data there to sift through. Yes, they are. But you can turn it off if you like. You go to the thing where it says cache my web settings and turn it off.
Well, I'm just saying that...
You can be skeptical.
Maybe we just need a little bit of skepticism. And
definitely.
I'm as big a Google fan as you're going to find anywhere else.
Exactly.
So.
But yes, everyone should be aware of it.
What you have to do, if you haven't already, to take advantage of this technology is to create a Google account. You used to have to have a Gmail account or a Gmail email address, but you don't anymore. You do need... A Google account. You can use any sort of email address. You just sign up for that.
Yep.
Once you've got that, you log in and click on the link that says iGoogle, and it's about as complicated as that. And then
I've got the nighttime one. Well, I've got the Cityscape. Have you seen this, boys?
Andrew's got a very pretty background there.
Let me just swing the machine around here so everyone can see it.
Hold it up to the microphone.
Yeah, if everyone wants to see that. It's a beautiful cityscape across the top of the screen. It's purple and blue now, but it changes colour through the day so that when it's in the morning, it's bright and cheery.
I see what you mean.
And when it's in the afternoon, the sun's setting, it gets a little bit more colourful, and then when we get with the moon will come out short. Oh, there's stars, look. See?
There's stars. Very pretty,
aren't
Andrew.
They good? So can I recommend, everyone, just go and have a play with this technology. It's not going to cost you anything. It'll probably get you all inspired like it did Dr. Ron.
I was very impressed with all of the little gadgets that come up on the screen, and the user interface, the way you can click and drag them around the screen is quite impressive. I also noticed
Honey,
that...
this was television.
Yeah, I also noticed that you could actually click and drag gadgets across tabs. So you can create your own tabs. So,
you
Andrew,
can.
If you wanted to move that Tech Talk Radio gadget over to a different tab, say another one across the top of the screen, you can do that.
You might have a tab that you tend to open when you're at work and another tab that you tend to open on the weekend.
Well,
yeah,
so I have
different sorts of information on.
Exactly. Yeah. I have tabs there, which says news, one says tech, but I can have one that says weather, I can have one that says movies, I can have one that says whatever. And providing a company provides a little plug-in for that, or a little API or a widget, whatever you want to call it, what do they call them? Gadgets.
Gadgets, and there's already thousands out there,
are.
In the public
and
domain.
And they will come through thick and fast, which is what Developer Day was all about. You can grab one of those and go, add to my iGoogle, and you can even see them. When you search Google and you search for, say, village.com for a movie or something, there'll be a little thing here, add to iGadgets, and you'll just go click, and it'll put a little tablet in your homepage. How easy is that? How user-friendly is that? And how free is that?
If you fancy yourself as a little bit of a computer developer and you think you might want to have a little tinker with iGoogle and maybe write a little gadget, then you can go to www.google.com/APIs/gadgets and all the information is there for you.
Fantastic. Now, this Google Developer Day was on the 31st of last month.
May.
It's the same day that Microsoft launched their new Pac-Man television game thing. I saw the picture of that. What the hell is that?
Oh, yeah, they made some of that. Microsoft made some announcement on the same day.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks like some Space Invader thing that sits in the corner of the pizza shop. But, you know, here's Bill with his finger making touching things. And
in what has been hailed as the first completely new computing platform since the PC, Microsoft unveiled its new Microsoft Surface.
He wasn't really clearing his throat, ladies and gentlemen. No. Sorry.
Now, this is a new device that Bill Gates actually announced when he was in California last week, Wednesday last week. And it does look like a tabletop computer. It's a horizontal screen, and you can touch it. It doesn't have a keyboard or a mouse.
No.
And more than one person can touch it in more than one place at once.
So hey, that's enough of a tease. Can we talk about it after the break? Because I'm thirsty.
We should. Off you go, then.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work.
Poor Carly. Chad is so pretty.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the extended mix of Tech Talk Radio tonight. It's one of those evenings. I'm Andrew McComb. Across the panel from me this evening is Dr. Ron and Graham. We're all here nashing away about all sorts of things technical. That's what we do in here each and every week. Whether you're listening to us on the pod, on the radio, however.
Streaming.
Oh, yes, streaming. We do have our streams running. There's a Shoutcast stream and a Windows Media stream. It's all there.
A Shoutcast / iTunes stream.
Yeah, yes, you were telling me about that. If you want, you can listen to your Shoutcast on your iTunes.
You can.
Sensational. Hey, one thing too. Dr. Ron, you just bought a new Sony Ericsson, didn't you?
I did, yes.
There's another new one coming out. There's the PlayStation Sony Ericsson that's just coming out, which is the PlayStation game, primarily a handheld device, which doubles as a telephone.
This looks like a PSP telephone.
It is a PSP telephone.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, all sorts of interesting gadgets.
I really don't need one of those.
Can you see the kids now? Mum, Dad, I want one of those so I can sit and play on the train on the way home from school. And then some kid will get knocked off because, give me that, Sonny Jim. The new crime wave. Like the sneakers when they came out and everyone knocked everyone's sneakers off and things
and
like
the,
that.
And the Blackberries and things like that.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
get mugged for their technology.
Exactly.
It's very sad.
Terrible, isn't it?
It is terrible.
Something should be done.
Well, if you're an owner of a Microsoft PC Surface computer, will you get mugged for your technology there? Will crooks come in and say, hey, I want one of those in my collection?
Swipe the table out of your meeting room.
I'd be chaining it to the floor if I had one.
Would you?
Microsoft would put a price tag on it between $5,000 and $10,000 US.
Ah, ouch.
Oh, yes, I'd be bolting it down.
Are they trying to make up for lost revenue in other areas, are they?
Maybe. We've been under a huge amount of pressure recently, not only from the likes of Google, but also the open source movement. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is it they've done? They've built a table.
They've built a table,
it's like a Pac-Man machine. When I first saw it, I said, where's the control stick? But no. No keyboard, no nothing. No, it's a PC and
they've gone to
a table.
They've gone to IKEA. They've taken to their coffee table with a circular saw.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly right. And they've hollowed it out. They've put what looks like a very high-spec computer inside it.
Yeah.
They've got a...
And a big plasma screen that's a touchscreen.
A big touchscreen, that's right, which takes up the whole tabletop. They've also got projectors underneath it, so they can actually display images, very, very sharp images, on the coffee table, if you like, on the Surface, the Microsoft Surface. And you can touch it to interact with the computer. You don't use a keyboard or a mouse. You actually touch the screen to interact. And
okay.
Similar to the Apple... the iPod there, similar to the new phone, the iPhone that they're talking about, how you can actually touch it in two places at once to stretch and images and drag things around the screen.
Yeah, I remember seeing that on the iPhone launch at that conference and you can turn things around and flip them over and resize them and all that sort of stuff.
Well, it's the same sort of thing, Graham, and you'll be able to have more than one person at a time sitting at the Microsoft Surface, manipulating documents, stretching things, dragging things around. This is the really cool thing. If I want to put some documents into your mobile telephone, for example, you pop your mobile telephone on the Surface.
Yep.
And Microsoft Surface says, whoa, Graham's phone's nearby.
There's a phone.
Yep. And then I can, dragging with my fingers, I can just flick things into your telephone as long as it's sitting on the Surface.
Okay. In theory.
In theory, yeah, as long as you've got a Bluetooth-enabled phone or a wireless-type-enabled mobile phone.
Okay.
So while Apple have been coming out with ITV, whatever they call it. TV device, the phone device, and all that stuff. And while Google have been out doing their stuff, this is the best Microsoft could come up with.
A table.
Yep. It's pretty impressive. Have you seen any of the demos?
I have seen videos.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound skeptical or anything like that, but it's just I did see Bill standing up there waving his finger around over the table and making beautiful puddly sort of looking.
And playing tic-tac-toe with people and things like that.
How does that mean that I can use my word processor or my spreadsheet, or how do I connect to the internet with it? No, you can just sit here and make it play games and things. Like.
Where it'll be useful, I think, is in places like the hospitality industry. You'll be able to have like menus.
So it's not tabled at the home user.
No, definitely not. Microsoft are aiming it at the moment at developers and industries like hospitality, places like that. So you can actually have real-time dynamic menus on the table in front of you.
Yep. Oh, no, hang on. I'm reading it here. Steve Ballmer from Microsoft said, we see this as a multi-billion-dollar category. We envisage a time when surface computing technologies will be pervasive, from tabletops to counters. wait for it, to the hallway mirror.
Well, maybe. Maybe. You could tap your mirror to say, hey, what's the weather like outside today, computer? And it'll show you Google, your iGoogle.
Yeah.
See, Google. And you'll be able to tap it back and drag it around. And.
Yep, right, moving on.
Where do we find out about this thing?
I would say there's lots of independent stuff at the moment on the web about it, lots of reviews and things like that, lots of videos. So you can search for videos on YouTube, places like that, you can see demos of it.
But there was also a Microsoft site you sent me to the other day?
I did. What was it? I haven't got it in front of me. Microsoft/Surface. I think it's something as simple as that.
Yep. Microsoft.com. On Microsoft.com,
All right. Next. If anyone's had a play with one, let us know, but I bet you no one has. It's all way too new. But Bill, while he was in town, he actually bumped into one of his old sparring partners from uni days. That's Steve Jobs, the Macintosh guru. Now, for those of you who don't know, Berkeley in the United States was the breeding ground for a lot of our major computer geeks these days, from Steve, Bill, everybody seemed to go there, even Steve Wozniak, who was the former founder, or he and Mr. Jobs and a few others founded the Apple computer. He built the first Apple II and II Plus computers way back over 30 years ago now. But Bill Gates and Steve Jobs got together and they shook hands and did all sorts of things of recent times, which is...
Oh, they're best of mates these days.
Yeah. So they caught up and had a bit of a 90-minute powwow the other day sitting at the same table. I thought that was really quite touching, really, wasn't it? Everyone's getting back together again.
What did they powwow about?
Jobs and Gates reminisced about early days working together in the 1970s, their views and current states of technology, what we're doing here now. In fact, that could be us, but not. We don't have the money that they have.
That's a shame, isn't it?
It is. That's why we're sitting here for love and passion talking about technology. dear. So, it was good. Neither of them had any complaints about anything in general. It was just fun working and doing what they're doing. So, it was just...
Nothing earth-shattering came out of the discussion?
Nah.
No?
It was pretty cash, pretty laid back. Bill said, hey, have you seen my table? And Steve said, yeah.
Have you seen my phone?
Yeah.
Check out the new mobile.
It'd certainly be worth looking up on the web to see what they did talk about, because I know I'll be looking that one up.
We'll have a bit of a look.
Yeah.
But, it was all good, as you would sort of expect. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment. In fact, we'll be talking about real time. Remember that?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Listen up, it's Lydia here in Silicon Valley.
Tech Talk Radio's US correspondent Lydia Davis is offering listeners a chance to ask questions about blogging.
If you don't know the answer, I'll find out for you.
This is a great opportunity for people who are starting out in the world of blogging, and why small businesses in particular would benefit from the Web 2.0 world. Visit Lydia's blog at blogwell.wordpress.com, or you can find the link on the Tech Talk Radio site. Go to the Tech Talk Radio tab on Blogwell and ask away. Fellow Aussies get preferential treatment. Take advantage of the fact that Lydia's also the marketing strategist for WebMama, one of Silicon Valley's biggest search engine optimization and search engine marketing firms. So why not hit her for some SEO help as well?
Come on, guys, let me have them.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here with Dr. Ron and Graham. And lots of things happened during the course of the week, and we haven't touched on anywhere near as many as we'd like to. Let's just track back a little bit to the wonderful world of iTunes and iPhones and things. Graham, you have some news on about the iPhone launch in the United States.
Yeah, I understand they've announced the date is going to be June 29th.
Yeah.
When the iPhone is going to be officially available in the US.
It'll happen in our lifetime.
Yep.
That's exciting.
That is exciting.
Is it on the first generation telecommunications technology, or we've moved up to 2G or 2.5G?
Well, it'll still be on the same 2G network, but it's on the American network that was known as Singular, but it's not. They've dropped all the Singular branding. And it's now going to be branded with AT&T because of a takeover or a change of leadership at AT&T, and they've decided to drop that brand for that particular network.
Okay, so what happened to Singular? Do they still exist, or have they gone by the by?
Well, as far as I can gather, and I'm not really fully up to date with all the US phone networks, but I gather it was always an AT&T
Neither
phone.
Neither am I, to be quite honest.
an AT&T phone network. but they've dropped it as a separate brand name, and they're now just calling it AT&T.
Okay.
But the good news is that Singular and AT&T do run a network in the US that is basically the same as the Telstra Next-G network here.
Okay. So it might come over here then eventually at all, because I thought it was only 2.5G technology.
Well, it is,
but they
do run a 3G network as well, which is very similar to the way Telstra run the network here. So there's a possibility, just in my mind, that they might come up with a 3G version at some point in the future.
Oh, okay. So well, that, we'll that, see what
that's
happens here in
Australia. Anyway, that's my reading of it.
Have you guys heard of Real Time? R-E-E-L Time? Remember them?
The movie people.
Yeah, they were a young upstart company that had a great idea that they could stream movies, you know, replace the Video Easy and Blockbusters of the world by going online and downloading and watching movies and things
like that. Right, online video stores.
They're sort of a bit of ahead of their time, and they put themselves into voluntary receivership, I think, trading suspension of their shares and stuff like that. They sort of said, well, we're not quite ready yet, can we wait? Anyway, they've been into no man's land for 4 months now, and they're finally coming out of their self-imposed exile. And what they're doing is they're going to try and drum up some more money because they don't think they have enough.
Okay.
They're going to put another 132 million ordinary shares on the market. Gee, if you
132 million shares.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, but they only want 5.3 cents each per share. So they're trying to drum up a bit of capital to try and get the wheels going on their little cart here.
Right.
They're offering it to, I think, Sony Pictures to try and get a $900,000 or $1 million investment from Sony Pictures into their skyrocket to try and get this thing going. So, I don't know, are we ahead of our time when it's coming to broadband and movies and things like that? Are we still in the realms of the video library for the next 12 months or so?
I think we're kind of in between. We're certainly moving away from the video libraries in droves, but I'm not sure yet whether we're quite ready for an online fully subscription service, because I don't think the bandwidth is quite there to do it.
I have to agree. And then look at Internode putting their putting their prices up because there's not enough to go around at the moment.
We download movies and TV episodes and things like that because we're familiar with that type of technology. We're talking about BitTorrent and things like that earlier in the show.
That's right.
For the average person who sits at home in their living room and says, I'd like to watch a movie now, if it's going to take them more than just pressing a couple of buttons on a remote control to access a movie site and click a download button, then people aren't going
to
do
it. And in particular, the amount of time. If you have to plan 3 days ahead, then you're going to start it downloading now, and then I'm going to have really slow web browsing for a couple of days, and then I'll be able to watch it in a couple of days' time. No.
I'll have to go on pause.
Not quite there yet.
I have to go and pause my downloads while I make my outgoing VoIP call on Engine and all that sort of stuff. Otherwise, it's too choppy to use and things like that.
Close, but not quite.
It's on the way. It's on the way, Andrew.
Yes, which millennium, though. But it is. It's a good concept when you think about it. And if you are lucky enough to have a high-speed internet access, and that's another interesting dilemma that's coming up. I was reading some articles during the course of the week about the definition of broadband. Obviously, each country has its own definition of broadband, and Australia is no different. But
Australia has its own definition.
Yeah. Are you going to tell? Yeah.
Not dial-up.
Yeah, exactly. Look, one of the articles was banding around a minimum speed of 2 megabits per second as where broadband should start these days.
Yep.
Not 512.
Which up until recently was faster than the fastest broadband you could get in this country.
Exactly. You know, the article also went on to say that in Japan at the moment, they've got fibre to the node and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
For $30, you get basically unlimited broadband at speeds of up to around 50 megabits per second.
Yep, and in places in Europe with fibre to the home, there's 100 megabits is not necessarily an unheard of thing.
I wonder how those organisations rolled out their technology. Was it government-based? Was it company-based? We really should look in and maybe take some notes, rather than get bogged down in all this ACCC, Telstra, government love, bizarre love triangle, as Dr. Ron calls it. Have you changed your opinion anywhere along those lines, Dr. Ron, in respect to the...
No, the things are happening. Things are happening fast at the moment with G9 approaching the ACCC for their special access undertaking. It'll be funny to see what happens there. Telstra are going to stick to their guns and they'll go down... They're not going to go down without a fight, without kicking and screaming. So we're going to expect a lot more controversy on the horizon.
Yes, just leading up to the election. Hey, by the way, Was it your dulcet tones I heard on ABC Radio National the other night? Around about 5 to 6 one night, I thought, I know that voice.
Maybe.
Look it up, guys. Perspective on ABC Radio.
Yeah. Oh, well, visit our website. You'll hear Dr. Ron on ABC Radio having tittle troubles.
Absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with technology.
No, absolutely nothing. No. How did you end up there? Wrong place, right time, huh?
Long story. We need a whole episode of TikTok Radio to explain it.
All right, we'll be back to find out after the break.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
We're all suckers for gadgets in here on the Tech Talk Radio panel. And tonight, no exception, have a gadget for you. We've all played with digital cameras and Picasso. We're all familiar with these digital frames that hang on walls and do things like that for you.
Oh, digital photo frames.
That's them.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep. Smart Parts is offering a new 15-inch digital photo frame. But yeah, so what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one plays AVIs and MPEGs.
Okay.
This is the stuff out of, science fiction films now starting to appear. So you can have your photo frame sitting on the desk in the office or hanging on the wall. So it's got a video playing.
Pictures hanging on the wall that move. Now, where have I encountered this before?
Hang on a minute.
J.K. Rowling.
You got it exactly right. It's a bit Harry Potter-ish, isn't it?
So, yeah.
These are LCD displays, 1024 by 768 resolution, which is about the size of around your average LCD resolution, so yeah, relatively high res. It can play MPEGs, MPEG-4s, MP3s, AVIs, so it's got little speakers in it out the back too. It's only got 256 meg of memory, so you can't put your feature film in there. But nonetheless, if you're lucky enough to have one of those funny emails sent to you from your wife or something with the kids on the swing or something, yeah, you can whack that into it, just Bluetooth it across as you would expect. And
so, what are the interfaces that are supported? Bluetooth? Does it also support Wi-Fi?
No.
No, okay. Just Bluetooth.
And it also supports SD cards and the like, so you can whack a little card into the back of it.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, you can slot it in and all that sort of stuff. So, that's the Tech Talk Radio gadget. As if you haven't got enough things, but I reckon it'd be really cool to have a moving picture on the desk in the office, don't you?
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
And another great thing, because we've been talking about applications and programming and things like that tonight, if you're a programmer and you're building websites, and let's face it, a lot of people like to tinker and dabble in a website from time to time, even the people that don't do it for a living like to make a page and whack it up on a site.
Absolutely.
There's a very important tool which you can use to see how your site looks to Googlebot, or a web robot that comes along to index your site to see how visible it is. See what links are there.
Oh, righto.
And see what text it's using to pull up to actually index your site. Now, a link to one such site, which was actually given to me the other day by someone whom I forget, might have been Lyd, actually, because she was doing SEO stuff over there for her web mama. The site is yellowpipe.com. Now, I'm not going to go into the full URL, but if you have a bit of a dig around on the webpage, you'll find something that says a links viewer.
Spelled L-Y-N-X.
Yep, L-Y-N-X. Now, we'll put a link to it up on the Tech Talk Radio website later today, now, so that you can come and have a look for it. But
Links is a text mode web browser that I use in command line, in text mode, on my Linux servers.
Oh, well, there you go. That's probably its origins.
Yeah,
really,
it is, yeah.
And the great thing about it is it actually shows you what a robot would see, that is, coming in and looking at plain text. Gets rid of all the pictures, gets rid of all the alt tags. Absolutely.
Or somebody using an unusual interface device, like a text-to-speech reader to read out web pages, like someone with a visual impairment, or someone who's getting the text converted to Braille.
So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio website of the week. It's at yellowpipe.com. And if you're building that sort of stuff, it's a great place to go and have a look.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you to James for your contribution for this week's Odd Spot. Hundreds of people, Andrew and Graham, have clicked on an online advertisement to download a free computer virus. The advertisement said, is your PC virus free? Then get it infected here.
You're kidding.
Oh, no.
A data security firm, F-Secure, says 409 people clicked on computer specialist Dita Stevens' ad during the six-month campaign on Google's AdWord. 409.
On a six-month campaign. Well, that's not too bad, I guess. Gullibility has been taken out of the dictionary, too.
It is. It has. An F-Secure spokesman said some of them must have clicked on it by mistake, some must have been curious, some must have been stupid. Mr. Stevens...
says, I must admit, it's the sort of thing I'd click on.
Out of curiosity, yeah, if nothing else, yeah.
Mr. Stevens says there was no virus involved and the campaign was an experiment aiming to show such advertising systems can be used for malicious intent.
Great. Well, there are a lot of those viruses around. Well, websites around that put malicious code on your sites, isn't there?
There are,
yeah. If something's flashing at you and says, virus, is your computer virus free? Click here to get a virus. Would you click on it?
Did it actually say that, click here to get a virus?
It said, is your PC virus free? Get it infected here.
Oh, God. Who sent you that?
That was from James.
James, g'day, James. You went there, obviously.
Maybe he was one of the 409.
Maybe. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio for this week. And next week, boys, Mark Diggins and I are on assignment in South Australia.
Who's going to be running the radio station, Andrew?
That's a very good question. I hope the show makes it to air next week. That's all I can say.
Tune in next week and find
Tune
out.
Tune in next week for a comedy of errors. It'll be fantastic. I look forward. We'll dial up it up on HSDPA while we're driving around, and we'll have a listen to you boys prattle on and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be interesting.
It should be at least.
Tech Talk Radio. For nothing else, tune in for that next week.
Yes. if for nothing else, to hear myself and Graham make complete fools of
themselves.
It'll
be fantastic. Yeah. I'm sure you'll do a wonderful job, boys. And I look forward to hearing the show. All right, until next week, you'll be listening to Andrew McCollum, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.